From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Hitta Home Safety Products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Did you know that your detectors need to be replaced every 5 to 10 years? Hitta detectors feature enhanced sensing technology that reduces false alarms and fast alerts for more time to get out safely. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com and shop our great selection of Hitta safety products. Save big money at
Hi, welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Great to have you with us. Jack Smith is our guest. He's the world number two male competitor in World Long Drive. He's getting ready for the World Long Drive Championship out in Colorado in about a week and a half's time, right? So, Jack, can you give people, you're down in North Carolina getting ready for this event. We were talking about this before we started this interview. Can you give us a sense of what your training looks like to get ready for Worlds and how involved it is compared to maybe another World Long Drive event you're doing over the course of the summer?
Absolutely. So when it comes to the World Championship, it is 3 days of hitting, where the tournaments prior to this have been one day. So you need to make sure you've got the endurance to do it, because the sport's pretty taxing, because you're swinging as hard as you can all day on like the normal competition day. And so that just wears your body out. But then you'll have to do that three times in a row for the championship. And you really have to manage how many swings you're actually taking, not over swinging. Does something feel tweaked? Don't push it, because something out of sync or out of rhythm. And if it feels weird in your swing and then you're pushing high speed, you're probably going to injure it. So you always want to be listening to your body and making sure you're as healthy as possible going into this. Another thing is, you're so late in the season at this point, you need to just refine you. They say, I think, 10,000 hours to master something. That's kind of like, I forgot what book it's called, but that was kind of the idea of that. And you don't really have that kind of time the week before a championship or 2 weeks before, since the last tournament. So it's really just focusing on you, swinging how you do and what makes you so good, and perfecting that and just trying your hardest to replicate the shot shape you think that grid's going to call for. We know the right half of this tournament grid, this championship grid, is a really hot spot. And you get heavily rewarded for hitting that. So you want to take aim at it. So technically our grid tightens up a lot more than what we're used to, just because that right side is so rewarding. So just working on the shot shape we're looking for and mastering our own quirks and skills that allow us to swing the way we do at our speeds. But for me, it's a little different. I've been dealing with a wrist injury for about a year and a half, and it proliferated into something a little bit worse this last tournament. But I've got some great doctors in my corner, kind of got a game plan of how to patch it together, kind of patch the wrist up and brace it to where I can still swing with it. And so right now my practice is more of adapting a swing that works with that, because if the wrist was hurting like it was this last tournament, I wouldn't be able to swing maybe a day, you know, much less 3 days. So my time's been more focused on adopting the brace and the way I gotta tape my hand up. So
what's the ideal shot shape you're looking for to a grid that favors the right side like this? Are you looking for kind of a tight draw? You're looking to kind of throw it out past the boundary and back in? What's going to work for you in this particular tournament?
So I think it all depends on the wind. Last tournament, we had a wind, a headwind off the left. So we didn't really want to hit draws and have them get knocked out of the sky for a righty.
Yep.
The whole, I guess looking this way, you're looking down grid. The grid cambers down and to the right slightly, as well as you want to favor the right. So if you do hit a really good fade, but it might have like a plus six spin axis, even though it might look like a good shot, that spin axis with that much curvature plus landing on the right side will run out of bounds. So ideally, if it's no wind or a subtle headwind or downwind, I'm going to try to hit a draw that kind of probably like a minus three spin axis. That's kind of, it looks like a ball. It just goes straight and then falls left. I'm going to try to hit that straight up the right and let it just fall left and then run with the slope the rest of the way back right. But if the conditions do not call for a draw, I'm not going to beat the dead horse and try to just punch it through it. The only time someone might do that where it might be a terrible condition, like a terrible scenario to hit a draw or a fade. The only time you would still hit it is if you're just struggling hitting any other shot and you're like, I need to hit a ball in to be competitive. I've just got to do what I know I can do. We live with the results because the best chance you have is, in this sport, giving yourself a chance. I've seen so many people fall early in the tournament, but they just hang in there and give themselves a chance. They barely move on to the next round, barely move on to the next round. And then the top eight, they just dominate. So you never know. As long as you get another chance, that's about surviving here.
Is there an expectation that you'll get a fairly steady win? This is Colorado. It's out in elevation. Obviously, mountains are kind of a different ball game compared to closer to sea level. Or is there an expectation that even within a couple of kind of different flights of guys trying to get advanced to the tournament that the win could change pretty substantially?
Absolutely, it does almost every tournament. And even we go into the tournament, we'll check the night before. It's like, oh, it's going to be a wind out of the north, northeast. And it's just not even close. So it's great, but that's the weather for you, right? It's going to rain, then it doesn't, or vice versa. But the wind, every time we've been there, I remember Friday for like the amateurs hitting in the last tournament, it was cruising downwind, probably like 15, 20 miles per hour. Unreal. I'm like, oh, I'd love to hit this right now. And the next day when we hit, the wind held all day in off the left. Wasn't too much to where you would have to maybe back off the idea of hitting a draw, but it held that wind pretty constant. And in a tournament at the same location before that one, our first one in Denver this year, the wind literally just did a 360 all day. It went from off the left, and then it kind of shifted downwind for a while, and then it just quickly went off the right. And then for like the semifinals and finals, it was just hard off the left. And they were hitting, we went from hitting balls 450 yards within two sets, they're hitting it 350, 360 to win. It's, you never know. And that's why it's really important to be able to change your shot shape or hit that hot spot in the grid to take advantage of some extra roll. Because just like golf, the conditions are still changing out there, and you got to adapt because we're trying to get every inch out of that ball. Not just, oh, I hit a quality shot in the fairway. It looked good, but it went pretty far. Maybe spun a tad. We're not looking for that. Oh, it spun a little. We're looking for it spun the exact amount, launched the exact amount, and we got every inch out of that ball we could for the strike we put into it, et cetera. So
Do
we
you
just try to be
foresee
prepared.
at any point in this tournament where there could be a set of conditions where you just kind of abandon the right side and go, it's not worth it to chase it for whatever reason?
Absolutely. If we have a wind off the left, I'm not touching it. Like a heavy wind, because at that point, if I'm trying to hit a draw straight, and trying to control or draw or a fade, if I hit a draw and I'm trying to hit the right side, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna hit a draw to fight the wind and land it there, it might hold, but it's probably gonna go nowhere. Versus, okay, I'm gonna play a fade. But if I try to hit the right side of the fade with this wind off the left, it will go OB. This is a heavy wind. So my goal is to almost aim out of bounds left or aim up the left side and hit that draw and let it, mentally try to land in the left side where hypothetically, like where it might actually fly to the right side. But at that point, if it's got that much wind off the left and I'm hitting a fade, the speed, the ball's side speed will probably have way too much by the time it lands, where even though it might land center grid, it will still run out of bounds right with that camber there. So in that scenario, I'm aiming out of bounds left, trying to land it left. If it goes a little right but stays in, that's fine, but that's not my goal. So
What does recovery look like over the 3 days of this tournament? I mean, I know you talked about your wrist, and that is probably its own animal. But even if there were nothing going on with your wrist, what would recovery look like going from session to session, round to round? And
absolutely.
is it even really possible, given the time schedule that you have?
So I'm a big, I get better and faster as I hit. So some people, they hit a lot of balls early and they lose all their speed, but they're really fast, but they don't have the same endurance, where I start off pretty slow, but I build and build. And as I get warmer, I get faster and more accurate. So I'm usually trying to pound a lot of balls. which might have led to the wrist stuff. But recovery, usually you'll do your day one. I need to relook at our tournament schedule for the championship since we have a bigger field. But in like a given tournament, 32-man field, two groups of 16, the morning group might hit at 8 a.m. The second group of 16 will hit at 9:30. So while we're hitting, that morning group can go back to the hotel, rest. Some of us have the Normatec, that the compression device to help drain lactic acid, trying to help with recovery, improve blood flow. So I'll tend to do that between our tournaments or between the rounds. If I hit in the second group of 16, right after I'm finished, they'll already have the eight from the prior group. So they'll already have the top 16 selected, but they still give us about 30 minutes to an hour for like a lunch break around that time for everybody to relax. So I'm usually trying to go eat something and stay out of the sun. Because a lot of times if I hit in the morning, I'll want to watch people hit, see how everybody else is faring and seeing what shot shapes are going the furthest, where they're landing it, or I just enjoy watching it. And without realizing that sun will beat you down just sitting in it all day. So just taking care of yourself and trying to prioritize yourself is the main thing, and just minimize any excess extraneous activities or just sitting in the sun or doing something like that. So.
Is there a fair amount of knowledge sharing between you and your peers about recovery? I'm throwing training to it as well. Like between the higher ranked men in this community, is there kind of a fair amount of not trade secret, but information you guys tell each other to just make everyone a little bit better?
Absolutely. I think I'm sure to some extent everybody's got their own little secrets. I tend to be an open book because my mentality is I would like to think my best could beat your best, but I want everybody to have the same advantages I have. I want everybody to have the same opportunities I have, and we just go up there, we have a great time, and the best man wins. That's kind of my mentality, and I met a lot of great friends in the sport. Everybody, I think, is kind of, for the most part, on that same page of just helping each other out. Like, hey, dude, I know your back's been hurting. This is what I've been doing, and it's really helping me. And then they might come back a week later, like, dude, yeah, that's phenomenal. Thank you so much. So, absolutely. And then everybody's always asking the swing questions. That's just golf in general. They're like, oh, hey, like, how does that feel? Why do you do that? So, and we're always happy to explain. And, I think it's one of those things where you could take the best part of this guy's swing plus the best part of this guy's swing and this guy's swing and think you could build the perfect swing for high speed, but it just doesn't always work like that. The swings that are fast are the ones that are proven, meaning I know with his biology, the way he moves, it might be a little different, but that's what allows him to move fast. All those mechanics swinging in that order. I can't just piece that plus that guy's because that works for him and his combo, but you can't combine them. And I think to some degree, people, don't care about sharing people like tips, swing thoughts, and just helping them because it's probably not going to translate because we're moving so fast and letting muscle memory take over. And at the same time, we saw Tiger Woods dominate golf, and as many swing videos he's had on the internet and swing thoughts and docu-series, like, we've not seen another person replicate Tiger swing and dominate like Tiger. It's almost not even possible to match everything up on the way every muscle fires, et cetera, to the T, plus having the same biology. So I just rambled on there about the whole fact that yes, we do help each other and share, because I don't think there's a lot of worry of giving someone too much information or powerful secretive information.
But you get into a couple interesting potential topics with that, and I'm glad you did, because it sounds like there really is no way to kind of Frankenstein it. You can't go pull aspects of certain swings to kind of work for you, your biology, how you deliver the club, etc. So for you personally, where along the way did you figure out, I'm actually pretty good at this, and how did you kind of come on to that way of delivering the club that you are really good at it?
So freshman year of high school, I decided to take golf serious, and I went to a swing coach in Texarkana named Jeff Jones, and he helped me rebuild my swing from the ground up. Like, we started hitting wedges from like 9 to 3 o'clock, like for 3 months. We completely rebuilt my swing, but it was a very powerful and efficient swing and would hold up under pressure. And I took golf serious freshman year to senior high school, but I think I burned out trying to be like some D1 stud, but I just started taking it serious freshman year, and I wasn't, I'm sure, the prodigy. Not sure I wasn't. And then I took off golf from freshman year of college to about end of junior year when some buddies got me back into it after I got in a ski wreck. And just wild training on the range after my ski wreck just to get outside, get some fresh air because I was banged up. I ran into a family friend of ours whose brother-in-law is previous professional golfer Hal Sutton.
Yeah.
And he was like, "I want you to come meet Hal. Like, you hit it far and you hit it further than anybody in this town." To me, it's just, I hit it far. You got golfers that hit it far and you got golfers that kind of hit it far. And what I just knew, like, I was a far hitter, but I didn't know to what extent. So we go over to Houston to see Hal, and Hal kind of stops me and goes, "Son, you know anybody that hits it as far as you?" I was like, "Honestly, no, sir." He goes, "I didn't think so. You just hit your 6 iron 240 yards." And this was like
God.
end of junior year of college, and it's funny because I was swinging hard, but that was just the gear that's what I was geared at. I wasn't
Yeah.
trying to murder the ball. I was like 170 pounds then. Right now I'm like 210, so I'm a little bit different weight class now. But yeah, Hal threw that out there, was blown away, and him and his club fitter were like, "You need to look into long drive. I know you're trying to get back into golf and all this, but you could probably have some success making money in long drive like now." And so into junior year, I decided to, okay, or going into senior year, I was like, all right, or I guess into junior year, same year, but I was already in my senior year in like December. So coming around into the spring, I started actually taking it seriously. Like, let me think about this long drive stuff. I was like, but first, I did some research, did three amateur events in long drive with a smaller tour. I won all three of them with like my golf gamer driver. They had all these long drive clubs, and I just got my little golf driver. And when I had success, I was like, okay, maybe there's something here. My dad and I talked about it, and we're like, okay, we'll finish up. I'll finish up at LSU, lock in my GPA. I'll pull my med school application to, because that will be there forever. Med school will be there. I'll still have my grades and my resume, et cetera. He goes, let's just give this a shot and see what happens. So, pulled the application, pursued long drive, and here I am getting to sit in front of you. So this is pretty awesome opportunity. I've had some great successes within the sport, but I've also, as quick as I've risen initially, I've also just had, I said, for me, a hard fall because like quickly injury popped up for me because I was just swinging like an invincible 23-year-old at the time. Now I'm 25, and you learn real quick, this sport will teach you that you aren't invincible even though you're young. So
Well, you know it. You're trying to get into medicine to the point where you know what the human body does and how fragile it's going to be operating at
absolutely.
these kinds of high speeds. I mean, you're not swinging. I'm guessing your what is your stock driver swing? Not for long drive, but if you just went out and played 18 with your
Yeah,
buddies,
so
what's
I
that
just
swing?
got back from the Titleist facility in Massachusetts. They had one of the other long drivers and I, Sean Johnson, and myself out there for full bag fitting and everything. And the speed I was cruising my driver on their machine and they were fitting me for was like 141 miles per hour. And that was like my cruising speed. And so we're about like 205 to 210 with that. And so yeah, that was about the same reaction they had. It was hilarious, but they loved it. And yeah, I'm just hitting balls out the back of the Manchester Lane practice facility. And I'm just staring at these brand new Pro V1s, Pro V1Xs. I'm like, is this okay? And like, yeah, go ahead. We got plenty. And I'm just in the woods, in the woods. And I'm like, this is hurting my heart. But they didn't care. They got plenty and they were awesome. But yeah, no, my gamer speed just has, through training long drive, everything's just inherently faster now.
Yeah. But I
So,
mean that but you're well aware of, hey, there are what, 50 people on the planet that operate a golf club at the kind of speed that you can operate it at. So obviously you're pretty well aware there's not a whole lot of prescription for what you're doing other than yourself, right? I mean, how do you kind of grow as a long driver, knowing you're gonna kind of have to just figure it out for yourself. There really aren't a whole lot of answers out there other than this small community of people.
yeah, absolutely. I try to lean on those that have been in the sport for way longer than I have and have seen a lot and experienced a lot. And then I also kind of use, I lean into my own background of my interests in biology and medicine, and always love reading up on, how the body works, how it moves. So I tend to have more of a science and biomechanical mind when it comes to how I view the swing. And so looking at that and just being pretty in tune with my body, understanding like, hey, that feels wrong. That feels like nerve pain. Let me go get that checked out. And it turns out to be like some kind of nerve entrapment. So I feel like I, it doesn't feel like a burning sensation. I feel like I might have pulled something or whatever it is. And I go get it looked at, like, oh yeah, you pulled this. So I've got a good feeling with my body just from like what I've researched and learned over time. So just listening to my body and listening to those around me, I do the best I can, but there's things that you still don't see coming. It's like golf. You can practice every shot on the range, but next thing you know, you're sitting under a leaf and pine straw blocked by a tree root. You're like, well, I didn't see this coming. I didn't practice this, but that's part of it. You just got to roll with the punches.
Is there anything in what you do, world champion? I mean, I'm sure you get nervous before any kind of competition, whatever it is. Otherwise, your heart's not in it, right? Is there anything that you've kind of realized how your body performs differently under the gun, under pressure, versus just wailing away trying to prepare for a tournament like this?
Oh yeah. A lot of times I'll struggle to get fast in practice. And like I might have days where I'm practicing and I'm trying and I might get like 210 ball speed, 211. Like that's just what I got. And then I get to a tournament and almost every time I'm 225 plus miles per hour. So it's I think just once that adrenaline kicks in and I get that extra focus and probably get a little bit of a numbing effect for all the pain from the adrenaline too, and I kind of just lock in, I guess would be the best word, and I feel good, I swing good, and I think there's also that understanding that this is it, this is game day, this is what you've trained for. Like there's only one of these. You either give it all you got or you don't. And I think my brain, without having to think about it, just subconsciously is like, all right, like. We're swinging to break our back, kind of thing. Not really, but here, leave it all on the table. And so I have huge speed gains in and out of tournament, and I could hold those throughout the tournament and get faster.
Did it take you any kind of significant experience to kind of harness that adrenaline rush that you get and works for you now? But for a while, was there any kind of, all right, how, I know I feel it. I mean, like, I play competitive golf and I know what it feels like in my body when that's happening, but I don't always know what exactly to do with it in certain situations. Is it always just kind of like, all right, this just clicks for me? Or did you have to kind of figure out a way to make it work for you?
I had to figure out how to make it work. I remember watching the sport when I started learning about it. People would be like shaking so much they could barely tee a ball up. So I was like, oh, you know what? When I get out there, I'm gonna be so just smooth with teeing that ball up, and they're gonna think I'm cool as a cucumber, but I'm obviously nervous and I'm shaking. And I think that was like the first thing, my experience with it. But getting my first second place finish and then experiencing the adrenaline and the shots it can make you hit, pull off some incredible shots, just far fast balls. But I had to get comfortable with it. That's where the veteran experience, people always talk about most things. I started to learn, okay, when I feel this, it's just more power, but don't get distracted by that. Like, what is this? Am I going to be nervous when I hit it poorly? Or don't get caught up with everybody around you to go look at them over there. It's like just when you're up there, focus on your goal. Focus on the grid, focus on your shot. You can talk to everybody you want after. You can do whatever you want after, but right now, focus on your job. The adrenaline's there, but focus on something else that you need to focus on to block that out and just swing. And like it will take care of itself. But in my first, like second place finish, it was more of that I'm getting more nervous. Oh my gosh, I'm making it. I'm in the finals. This is crazy. I'm a rookie. Oh, I'm freaking out. And I'm trying my hardest to just kind of lock in, but you kind of get squirrel brained and don't hit your best stuff, and you walk away like, man, like I've been hitting it good, and didn't piece it together that set. And then my two victories I've had were same exact feeling of just, it was just me tunnel vision with the grid. And I just made sure I stayed locked in on that and focused on that. And I was like, I'm usually, I try to be a nice guy. I said, and I think I usually am, but sometimes I'm too nice and I still focus on, oh, good to see you. Oh, good to see you. When I need to focus on just, get the job done. Kind of, you need to be selfish in that moment just to focus on you and your job. And then afterwards, you could hang out with everybody. So that's something I had to work on, was actually be a little more selfish when I compete. So, but the adrenaline, once again, kind of strayed pretty hard, but the adrenaline hits you. And in this sport, you need to use it. Well, if you might try to tamp it down to not overshoot your 7 iron yardage, but in long drive, you're trying to get it out and use it because the other guy just used it and he had a 380-yard drive and you're sitting at 360 and you hit it great. You need the extra drill and you need something to give you that extra power. And so you got to tap into it.
All right, last question. For people who are going to watch this, maybe they haven't watched a lot of long drive, or maybe they are veteran watchers of it and they're just not aware of maybe some of the subtleties. If you are in the zone, what's the one giveaway, if any, other than, being happy, that people might notice if they're watching, like, Jack's in the zone. He's killing it today. He's doing exactly what he wants. Is there any kind of tell that people who are watching can figure that out?
Absolutely. It's gonna be me smiling, but me also probably not talking to anybody. I'll always congratulate my competitor, win or lose. I'll always cheer him on. But if I'm hitting and I'm happy and I'm smiling and just not really acknowledging a lot of people around me, but I'm just always looking ahead, that's pretty much my sign. It's just me and God and his plan, and I'm in a very happy position, and I'm thankful to be there, and it's go time.
Well, Jack, thanks for spending some time with me. I really appreciate it. Best of luck in Worlds. Hopefully you're kicking ass and hopefully everything goes well and you have a great tournament.
Awesome. Appreciate you, Ryan. Thank you for having me on. This has been great.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-Grainger, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-Grainger, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.